Do you find listening to your friends' stories into motherhood uplifting and empowering? Brought to life by maternal health company AMA & Co., AMA Need a Minute provides mothers the space and the minute to share their real and raw experiences as well as their learnings. So pour yourself a glass of wine or tea, throw in that fifth load of laundry for the week that will sit in the dryer, and join in to celebrate, commiserate, and build a new kind of community. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to AMA Need a Minute. Today, I have a couple on the show, Elizabeth and Erica, who just passed their one-year mark with their firstborn. Congratulations. You made it. How do you guys feel?
We survived.
Yeah. Did you guys do a nice celebration for him?
So as many one-year-olds do, he had a virus when it was supposed to be his first birthday party. So we ended up having to cancel the whole thing. But we've gotten to celebrate on and off with some people closest to us, which was nice.
Awesome. Yeah. So first off, I would love to ask how you guys met and allow you to introduce yourselves.
Do you want to take
yep.
this?
We met online, as many millennials do these days. At the time, I was in business school with you, and I was working constantly. And so Tinder was getting big, and I was like, why don't I try it out and see who I meet on this?
You're like, I have so much time. Let me invest in a
relationship. Okay. Yeah, why not try to find someone to date right now? And so Beth and I first connected on there back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then we took a break and reconnected a couple months later. Yeah, it's been great ever since.
What do you guys do?
I run operations at a health tech company.
And I have a much more boring job. I work in a commercial real estate finance, which has been a little quiet these days in the market. So tough times.
Yeah. So you guys met in 2015. When did you guys get married?
We got married Labor Day of 2019. So we slipped in right before all of the pandemic worries.
We were like one of the last weddings of our friend group before kind of COVID kicked in.
Yeah, the only thing it really ruined was our honeymoon.
Yeah.
Oh, we were supposed to go
Italy.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. In June 2020. And it was like we were holding out hope for so long because it was like March. You were like, maybe it'll be like a couple weeks and then we'll be fine. But yeah, sadly, we had to postpone that trip.
Now you get to bring Jackson with you.
No.
No. He's not ruining Italy.
I think we're going to do like a 5-year wedding celebration because by that time, he'll be a little bit older. Our future child will be old enough where we won't mind leaving them.
Yeah.
Then we can actually like go and enjoy it, just the two of us.
Have you guys left him alone yet?
Oh, yeah.
For a weekend? Okay.
We haven't been those parents that are like, no, don't touch our baby. And like, day one, somebody was like, can I hold him? I said, yes, please. So we were okay with it. We realized around his first birthday that we spent so much time over the year figuring out how to parent and how to be working parents. And we realized that the only time we took to have the nanny stay late or anything like that was for our jobs, like if we had to work late for work or for our friends and family, but we never went on a date. We never kind of made time for ourselves. And so it was actually around his 1-year birthday that we did a staycation and we stayed at a hotel Lower East Side and the nanny stayed with him through the weekend. And
oh, that's perfect.
That was our first time where we really had nights away from him.
Yeah.
But we've had plenty of time where we hand him off and we're perfectly happy with him.
But that was like a perfect stepping stone because it was like we weren't that far. So if anything came up, we were around. Yeah. And we trust her and love our nanny. And so we knew we didn't have to worry about that either. And we didn't have to travel, which is like a great thing, but also kind of nice to get out of the city too. Yeah. But not having to do that was like perfect.
Yeah. And does the nanny take care of him on a regular basis or do you have him in daycare? Mm-hmm.
No, 5 days a week she's with him. Daycare felt almost like too rigid for the way both of us with work, it was the idea of him having to drop him by a specific time, pick him up by a specific time was rough. And then also they hand him back to you with his dirty bottles or dirty clothes, or, and you're still having to do all those things. And it, the nanny affords you, if you can afford a nanny, it affords you the extra flexibility of like, if you're running 30 minutes late or if you need them to stay longer, or like, she does his dishes and helps prep him food, and she does his laundry. And so that, as two full-time working parents, really does give us a little bit more sanity week to week. So for us, it was, we need a nanny to survive.
Yeah, for sure. It's also nice having that resource too, who like knows your kid so intimately and is like part of your parenting. And like being new parents, especially, we're kind of like, when do we start like potty training or like starting solids? And so she's been like really instrumental in like giving us some feedback and I don't know, just being another voice of reason. When you're a scared new parent.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. I mean, I didn't even think of that, but that's so true, because it's like, oh, I'm supposed to stop him from using a bottle at this age. Like, how would you know? You wouldn't know.
Right.
Unless someone told I don't you. Understand the people that it comes to, quote, naturally. I'm not that person. When we were interviewing for a nanny, I was like, you're going to teach me how to be a parent, right? And she was like, yeah, I've got it. So it's been extremely helpful. And even in the worries of, oh no, is he going to choke on this thing? Or, and especially Erica, she, every time he's eating something, she's like, should he have a cracker that big? And she's freaking out. And then Manny's like, hot, like, chill. Like, he's fine. He has teeth. Like, he'll chew it. He knows he doesn't want to choke either.
Yeah.
So she helps kind of take us off the ledge often.
Yeah, I remember the first time I gave my firstborn, either it was an avocado or a banana. There's an 11-minute video of me giving him the first solid, and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, is this too much? And then it ends up being a smidge. And I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, what am I even eating? There's nothing to eat on this.
The softest thing. He's like, I've eaten weirder things off the ground.
I know, right? Now with my second, I'm just, give him anything. And my aunt's like, he's choking. He's choking on the noodle. And I'm like, he's fine. He'll cough it out.
You're like, just hit him on the back.
Hit him on the back. I'm like, let him figure it out. Nobody touch him. And they're all like panicked standing around him.
Yeah, that's me. I am that panicked person.
So you guys got married in 2019. How did you know it was time to start having the baby?
Number one, we're planners. And being a gay couple kind of doesn't afford you the ability to just like wing it. You have to plan everything from talking about it together as a couple, and then also the whole process. So I'm 3 years older than Erica, and I also have been very gung-ho my whole life about like, I wanted to be a mom. And so for me, I have a blood clotting disorder, and I have kind of like a expiration date on the max age that the doctors wanted me to go through the process. So for me, I felt like, hey, I have to be pregnant and having children by X age, which is 35, which isn't that old. And so we knew that early on. And at the time, Erica, who, as we've stated in the beginning, was in school working full time, you know, running the world, she was like, I don't physically want to carry. And so I was, well, if we're having multiple children, we've got to kind of do it in a certain time period. So we had said, let's get married. Let's kind of be together. We had things on, you know, we wanted to do our honeymoon. That was kind of our big benchmark, like our big hurrah. Yeah. And then we'll come back from that and we'll start like the testing and the figuring it out. So that was kind of how we went about it. Cause at that point I would have been 33. And so that's what we had said. And then, so we just like lightly started going to the doctors, doing blood work, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And COVID hit. It paused like everything. And so then we were just kind of like, oh no, thank goodness we started some of this talk, because who knows, I mean, you couldn't see a doctor at the time.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's farther into the story, but that was kind of how we got to the conversation, and the planning of it all was probably me and my time frame. And then kind of the rest fell into place after that.
Yeah. The only thing I'd add is we also wanted to be younger parents and knew that we wanted to start around that time, but also so we could like enjoy when our kid is older and like be able to be active with them and run around while they're younger.
Yeah. It was like keeping up with them now. And also Erica's parents are super cool. They're parent goals. Yeah. And so they're like young and they can go skiing with not only their children, but their grandchildren. And it's just like things like that are things I want. And then I also want when your kids go off to college and you get to kind of get a little bit of your life to yourself. I want to be able to enjoy it. And I see, I watch Erica's parents do that. They travel all over the world and they're hiking mountains and going out. And I want to be able to have that too. And so for us, that was important. Waiting a 10-year difference or 5-year difference really does change what that experience is like.
Yeah, 100%. I was actually just going to ask Beth if you're an active person also, because I'm always seeing photos of Erica and her dad like on a mountain somewhere. So I was like, oh, like, is this something you guys want to do, Jackson?
So I'm active, but I'm not crazy. And so I'm more like her family jokes that I'm like, I'm here for a good time. And so if I'm having a good time, like we can go skiing, but I don't want to go skiing when it's like negative 20 degrees out. That's not fun. But I want to go skiing where I can ski, opera ski, enjoy myself. Yeah. I'm like too old to break myself like that. But I picked Erica up from the airport after she like hiked Kilimanjaro with her dad. So I'll give them credit on that one. Yeah. But I'm definitely a step below that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I totally agree with that. I like envision going on these like really cool trips with them when they're like low teens. I feel like that's when they like can hold their own and don't need a nap and stuff and can like carry their own backpack. That's my goal. So you elaborated on how you guys decided who would carry. How did you guys select a donor?
So when we met with our fertility clinic, they recommend like a couple of different cryobanks to work with. And I think it's California. Do you remember what the other one was?
Fairfax.
Yeah, there's like three.
Seattle and one other.
Yeah, there are three that are in like the top that they highly recommend. I think just based on success rate and like their genetic testing and information that they can provide you with. And so we kind of had an idea of specific parameters that we wanted, namely being, well, of course, health history was the most important.
They run genetics tests on us, on both of us, because in case at the off chance Erica decided in the future she wanted to maybe carry, we both did genetics testing. And so after they gave us kind of these top banks to choose from, which these days it's literally like shopping online for clothes. You can just like input into the filters and it like pops out who your best donors are. It's a very easy process. It's not like old school flipping through a binder.
Yeah. Pictures, profiles.
Yeah. And so based on our genetics, that was our first goal, narrow it down from genetics. Because we have, in being an LGBT couple, we have the unique ability to choose to avoid those things. Whereas like you meet your partner, you don't have that comparison on your first date together.
Right.
And so that was our first goal, was just to choose a donor who didn't genetically have any issues in comparison to ours.
And but with both of us.
With both of us. And I actually, I carry a whole bunch of things because of my Jewish ancestry. So we avoided that. And then once we did that, we kind of then got vain about it. And that's where Erica was going.
I took a step back because I remember the health history was obviously.
Well, health history, like, we're not that.
Health history was almost the final filter.
No, that it was like genetics, health.
We did genetics. And then the vanity is what narrowed it down more for us.
Yes. Okay. So then we wanted height because we're both like 5'1". And we were like, let's. Whatever, I'm 5'1". And so we were like, let's give our future children like a shot at having
some height.
Yeah, you're like, someone needs to change the light bulbs in this house.
Exactly. Yeah. We're like, someone's got to reach this.
We have step stools everywhere. Yeah.
And so that was like our first non-health related parameter. And then when we were thinking about our family, we were like, it would be nice if we could choose a donor who had blue eyes, because Beth and I both do. And so do our families. And we were like, that would be kind of a nice trait to just link us all together.
Yeah.
And so those were really
the only things. Like, we didn't care about, do they have a master's degree or any. My mom's a doctor. I'm not a doctor. Those aren't filters that I felt were going to be this like really strong trait that carries through. So it was height and eye color. And then after you kind of clicked those little filters, we had probably 7 donors across the top 4 sperm banks in the country, which it was nice that you weren't choosing from 50, but it felt already very limited. And that's when we then started to click in, and you can then read their health history. So you can read their family history of cancer and all these things. And then based on that, we probably had a top three or four.
Yeah.
But there was always one we kept coming back to.
Yeah, there was one we really loved, and we would look at them and then come back to it a couple weeks later. And he was like always our favorite.
But the fun part about COVID is we did this with like bottles of wine. We would drink a lot of wine and do the sperm search. It was because we were just in a studio apartment at the time with like, that was all we had going on.
That was our exciting weekend plan.
Yeah.
What was it about that particular donor that you guys loved?
As part of the package that you can get different types of memberships. We did like the most basic kind, but you still get a decent amount of information, and they'll give you like writing samples, like interview like that the donor has.
You get everything from like, you can hear if you want a recording of their voice.
Wow.
You get how they would describe themselves, and you get how the staff at the cryobank describe them.
Oh.
But we never did the whole, you can see a picture of them when they're older, because to us, it just felt like, does that change anything?
Yeah.
And so we just decided also like kind of the less is more. The whole point was this was kind of transactional, and I didn't want to feel more invested into this person, or I didn't want to feel like I can only see them in Jackson as he got older. It was kind of, I didn't need those extra layers of information, but I don't know. He had a really cute toddler photo.
Does Jackson look like the toddler photo?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm really bad at seeing. Everybody says Jackson looks just like
me. He does.
And I can't see it. So I'm really bad at this. But yeah, there was something we kept going back to. We liked all the descriptions of his body, his fit. And yeah, it kind of.
He liked to hike. And I was like, I love that. And just felt like it was
favorite food is avocado.
Yeah. I think his description was like outdoorsy foster parent.
And yeah.
I don't know.
Oh.
He seemed like a nice person, even though you're just reading this on paper, but it really came through the application.
And I would say probably the one other piece that's actually a major filter for us was, and this is actually choosing a sperm donor is like the first really big decision you make on behalf of your family and your child before they're even in this world. And this one is probably the first real decision we made on behalf of Jackson. Was some donors never want to be contacted ever. And some leave the door open to, they can be contacted when like the child's 18. But you have to choose that when you choose your donor, which that's like a big thing to have to figure out and come to terms with before you're even starting to get pregnant. That's not even in the cards yet. And so we decided we wanted a donor who was willing to be contacted at some point in the future, because we just didn't know what 20 years from now holds for us. And we didn't want to take that option away. That's another thing that narrows down your donor options. So that was probably the last of the filters that were really important to us.
Yeah.
So how does it work? Once you make your selection, do you send a deposit? They hold this sample for you.
You choose how many vials. Our doctor had told us to assume 6 vials per pregnancy. And so we got 12 because we're hoping for 2. And you literally put it in your cart like you're shopping, and you pay with a credit card like you're shopping. So actually they do offer, so because we got more than a certain amount of vials, they give you 3 free years of like a cryobank to store it. So you're not paying to keep it on ice in the meantime. Yeah. It really is like that simple.
Yeah.
And then the next step just comes in when you need it to be transported to your fertility clinic. But other than that, that's how easy it is. Like a random person could just decide for fun they want to go buy some sperm.
Yeah. But we just try to time it.
Weird thing, but.
Because when you spend a certain amount, you get like 3 free years. And so we were like not trying to get it too soon before we were starting so that we would hit the end of the 3-year period. Because then you're paying like a monthly fee to store it, which is just like another subscription expense.
They also offer buyback.
Yeah.
Which is.
What does that mean?
I know. So if you never use it. So right now it only took us 4 tries to get pregnant. So we've got 8 vials left. Say it takes us another 4 tries and we're pregnant again.
Oh my goodness.
And we have 4 vials left after that. if they've never left their own storage facility, like they never left to go to the doctor's office, they will buy it back at like what, 60-70%
of the, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Of the cost. So at least you're kind of almost like recouping some of the money you put out.
But that's also a 3-year window.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So that's the other like timing thing to keep in mind.
So now we're rushing for baby two, just getting money back.
Yeah, I know.
We have to like. It's like commodities. You're like driving like buy, sell, trade. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting, but it makes sense. And I think that it's nice that they give you the option of buying back essentially, right?
Cause, like, yeah.
You want to have that comfort level that I'm assuming you guys want your second one to share the genetics, which is why you want to keep the same donor. Yes. So it's nice to have that comfort level that you can buy more and then not use it or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you've reserved your 12 vials and now you're going to your fertility clinic and they're shipping it there. We're shipping, I guess, 6 of them or not 6 of them.
The cryobank has a cryobank storage in New York and it stays there. And the fertility clinic basically has 2 on hand at a time because they need 2 vials for every attempt. Because basically what happens is they thaw one for the attempt, but if for some reason that thawed vial
isn't viable
for whatever reason, which is rare, but if it happens, they want the backup because they've just now timed out your entire fertility cycle for that one attempt, and it would stink to lose that day and then have to wait another month. And so they always have 2 on hand for every attempt.
Okay. So did you have to take any kind of like hormones or any kind of injections, or you just went in like, here I am.
So in the beginning, we just did an IUI natural cycle, which again is nothing other than they're just helping inseminate you. I have always had like an extremely regular period and I've never had any issues. And so when they did all my testing, everything was like all on the up and up. You could track me to the day. So they were like, let's just go the most natural route. It seems like you should have no issues. And so that's how we did it. And we did that 3 times and with, you know, no success. And then when it came time for my 4th attempt, they decided they were kind of going to level up a little. And so that's when they introduced hormones for me, a medication called Clomid. It makes you produce more than 1 egg, super low dose, like the lowest dose of it. Some people, they put them on higher doses. It's basically the first stage of intervention. So teeny little bit, but I'm sure Erica can attest that teeny little bit was not fun.
It went a long way.
Did it mess you up a little bit?
I had a couple mood swings.
Oh, no. Oh my
this was when Beth had to fly back to New York.
Yeah. So I was in Maine and they called me and they were like, hey, we've decided we're going to change like your course. We need you to come in for final testing and to put you on medication. So I had to drive to the airport, got on a plane to fly to New York to go to this appointment. Then I had to take these meds. Then I had to go all the way back up to Maine. So I was already in a mood.
Yeah.
And then you add that my hormones had been messed with. Now that I look back on it, it's very funny. But at the time, it was not funny.
Yeah.
But it ended up making it so I had 3 viable eggs at the same time during insemination. And that was when it actually worked. So kind of with that little boost, I was able to get pregnant still through the IUI cycle. So even most people are like, wow, it's not that common to get pregnant through IUI because the odds are so low.
Right.
But we were really like, we can't have triplets. It ups your chances of multiples like 8-10%, which is still pretty low, still low, but higher. Erica was freaking out.
Yeah.
They told you the 3 eggs came down and then they did the insemination. And then you don't know if they're fertilized or not.
Right. Yeah. Every clinic has different rules that they've decided they abide by. And our clinic won't inseminate you if you have more than 3 eggs, because anything over 3 can be really dangerous pregnancy to both the mother and the children. And so they've decided as a clinic, their best practices is to, if it goes up above 3, then they'll basically not do in that cycle.
Yeah.
And so when they said it to me, I went through this like emotional, like, what do you mean? We just did all this stuff and I'm going to maybe not get to try getting pregnant. But thankfully it was at 3 and that's their like magic number.
Yeah.
That was something I had never known until I was like sitting there in that moment. I had done blood work right before I left. And I think it was kind of, they had just made a game time decision. If I had said no, we could have waited, but we were kind of already, we were on the fourth attempt the and we're attempt. Kind of
yeah.
like,
yeah. yeah. Right. I mean, that's the thing, like with doing a fertility, with a fertility clinic, like you're really tethered to wherever that location is. Yeah. Even the first time that we went in, we had driven out to Jersey for the weekend and we got an email on Saturday that was like, can you come in tomorrow morning? We want to do your first attempt.
Oh yeah.
And we had to like drop everything, like run out of our parents' mm-hmm. house. And we weren't that far away, but it was just, you think about, oh, maybe we shouldn't leave the city while we're trying to get pregnant. Right. You never know when you kind of need to run in, what if it's like medication yeah. leading up to getting inseminated. So it just gets a little bit trickier when you're trying to like plan anything.
Yeah. I feel like that's so hard. And I think it's such a interesting perspective. It's like, I didn't have to go through a fertility clinic, but I could see that being anxiety inducing, right? Like, hey, you need to come in tomorrow. And you're like, okay, like I need to go right yeah. now. And oh my gosh, this is happening. Like this is happening. We're going, you know? And then just having to do that over and over, I feel like that's pretty taxing. Even trying naturally is kind of like, oh my gosh, we need to like do it right now.
Yeah.
Not today. Okay. And if not today, then we have to wait another month.
It's, yeah. I have to say, even in like all of the stress of it, I would have these moments. Erica couldn't come with me to the appointments because it was still during like COVID right. where
you could have somebody with you.
But I'd have these moments where I'd be sitting in the fertility clinic and there'd be all these heterosexual couples in there and they look just like so much more exhausted. It's because by the time they're in a fertility clinic, they've already most likely been trying. Yep. The larger percentage of that group has been trying without success. And now they're having to go to these other measures. And it felt kind of sad. I felt fortunate in that mm-hmm. situation. So like my stress during it was pretty low because I didn't have any things come up. And here I am just, I happen to be at a fertility clinic because I'm a gay woman and that's my process, yeah. but yeah. I'd known that for years before. Yeah. Whereas this, like I'm watching these other people who didn't expect to be there and now they are. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I felt I was coming from a place of privilege in that moment. So it was like a really interesting thing yeah. to be around.
Yeah. That's pretty heavy. And I think of some of my friends and colleagues I know that have been struggling with it. And I feel like a lot of them don't even get to the clinic until a year of trying. That's usually yeah, what yeah. the OB tells you. So yeah. And I remember like when we were trying, every time it was failed, it's just like a stab, yeah. you know, you feel like yeah. you're not doing something right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had 4 attempts. How was that for you? Like, were you guys, okay, that's fine. Like, they told us it was going to take a few times. We have 6 vials. Yeah. It's fine.
In the beginning, it was kind of like, I think you try to expectation set and you're like, the chances are so low. Like, it's going to be at least 4 or 5 times. But then it's so hard to not naturally
get your hopes up.
Yeah, get your hopes up and every single time. Because like we would know on the day.
Yeah.
Which was like almost just
Know too much yeah. is how we keep saying it. You know the day you're inseminated. So you know the latest date you could pee on. You know exactly what 14 yeah. days is. They literally tell you, don't pee on a stick before X date. You're like yeah. sitting there, okay. And then I have to say,
calendar invite at yeah.
So the other part to that is, I would say for me as the one whose body was potentially being affected, I started to become a little slight head case because, again, you know too much. During those 14 days are also when, in theory, your body would be getting ready to get your period again.
Yeah.
And they tell you the symptoms, the things you feel from being pregnant are this like very similar same. To yeah. having your period.
Yeah,
so right. every time something happened, I'd be like, I'm having a cramp, but it's a bigger cramp than I would normally have. Do you think I could be pregnant? It was just every little yeah. thing yeah. I would overanalyze during mm-hmm. those 14 days. And then I would obviously every once in a while, I mean, maybe not obviously, but I would pee on a stick after like 6 days. I was like, this is it. I feel so different this time. It yeah. must be it. And then
yeah.
6 days isn't the amount of time you need because it can take up
depending
to 8. It can take up to 8 yeah. to even conceive in theory. Erica was like, these tests are expensive.
Like that's $20.
She's like, there's no ROI. There's no ROI on this test.
It's a Snapple fact. It's like, if it tells you it's negative, you're like, okay, but it could still be positive in 6 more days.
Yeah, right. It didn't make me feel better or worse. I'm still indifferent for what's happening. Those 14 days are weird. And again, the no too much is that, like, you go for the same thing of, even once we found out we were pregnant, you know, from day one, whereas a lot of people don't know till like month one or month two. Like
4 weeks.
It makes pregnancy feel so long when you know.
And it's the time when you shouldn't tell anyone.
Yeah. So and like, you just know for so, so long.
So did you tell anyone at day 14 besides your fertility clinic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, funny story. So the time I did get pregnant, we were hosting my sister-in-law's bachelorette party at our apartment. So there were like drunk women all over our apartment.
And not Beth.
And the morning of the last day, I was supposed to pee on the stick. And so I go into the bathroom while everyone's still sleeping and I do it and it's positive. And it's the first time in 4 times that it's positive. And I'm like shaking. I go out and I tell Erica, my sister-in-law is here. And so literally her whole bridal party found out because we were all in our apartment and it was just like hard to contain it.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, my sister-in-law was like hungover crying and it was just, it was a messy, messy day. But yeah, that's how 8 random people all knew.
Yeah, but and the problem was
we had their wedding where I was pregnant at, and still nobody knew, and my whole family was there.
Oh,
and I had to talk to all the bridesmaids and be like, "No one here knows, and you can't get drunk and say anything." It was a very funny full circle.
Did not think about the consequences.
And so much control on your part for not drinking during the bachelorette weekend. So much control.
It's harder to keep it a secret when people know you're trying in that way. Mm-hmm. Not like we're alcoholics by any means, but we're young people in New York City and you go out and you drink and you do things. But every time you did an insemination cycle, you had to act as if you were pregnant for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So people would like, if for those 2 weeks you had events or you had something and you weren't drinking, people are always like, "Are you okay? Are you feeling okay?"
Yeah.
And so by happenstance, a lot of people end up knowing you're trying. And then a lot of people have a lot of questions and they constantly ask. And it becomes that a lot of people get let in on your process, whether you like it or not. It's a lot harder to just keep it locked up as a big secret.
Yeah. Pro tip for one of my friends. She would just say, "I'm not drinking. I'm on antibiotics."
There you go.
So I was like, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good reason to not be.
Yeah. Right? How was pregnancy like for you?
I had an easy pregnancy. Yeah, my pregnancy was good. Probably the hardest time during my pregnancy was what people call the golden trimester. It's like the second trimester. For a lot of women, it's like after you feel really sick and gross in the beginning and before you're really big and gross at the end, it's like – things are good. And for me, my hard part was it was like 8 weeks between ultrasounds. So it's like the longest time between seeing any change in your baby. I no longer felt horrible and I looked the same. And so for me, I had like an emotional breakdown one of the nights. And I said to Erica, like, "Do you think the baby's okay? Because if I'm not bigger yet and I feel great and I don't get any updates from the doctor, like, how do I know everything's good?" And it's almost like you want to feel like crap, because it makes you know everything's working and everything's going fine. And so for some reason, feeling really good made me feel really bad emotionally.
Oh.
So that was probably the only thing, but that was more of a mental thing than anything else. A lot of heartburn at the end.
Oh, me too.
Okay. At the end, I snored.
It was a very quiet sleeper, but it was like a train. It was insane. And she didn't believe me. When I would complain about it, she would record my heavy breathing because I sound like Darth Vader. But when I finally played it for her, you're like, "Wow, I can't believe I sound like that."
But then as soon as I had the baby, no more snoring.
Yeah, it was gone.
So it was good.
Interesting. I don't know if I snored or not. Luckily, my husband's like a heavy sleeper, so it's just like the same.
No, Erica would wake me up. And I'm like, "Time out. I'm 10 months pregnant. And you're waking me." It took me hours to get comfortable enough to fall asleep.
Right.
And you're waking me up. Honestly, she's lucky our marriage is still out. It was like good because she tested it then.
Did you have the pillows, the like
I did. I had actually, like, I had a wedge, which was the most helpful. But at the end, with my heartburn, kind of just sleeping vertically was the most comfortable. I started to go to the nursery in his, like the little recliner.
Yeah.
Because that was the most comfortable for me. It was so hard to sleep at the very, very end there.
Yeah. So how did you guys prepare for labor and delivery?
We didn't.
Yeah, everyone was like, what's your birth plan? And we were like, to have the baby.
I made sure we had like hospital bags, but other than that, we didn't do any classes, any other than getting, it was like, we got the nursery set up, we made sure to have the car seat, and we got the bags packed, but neither one of us.
But we kind of knew, like, you were going to have an epidural.
Yeah.
Like, well, no. We talked about those kinds of
things. I don't know
things.
That I was like, if I get there and I want an epidural, I'm having an epidural. Yeah. I wasn't like I'm going to do the natural birth thing. I was kind of like, I just don't want to have the baby in an Uber on the Williamsburg Bridge. And it was like, I don't want to have a baby on the L train. Like, as long as I get to a, like, my only part of my birth plan was like, be at the hospital. And so, which sounds like a low bar, but that was the only goal I had, was to get to the hospital. And my mom's a doctor, and I just like grew up in this like world where it was like, trust my doctors. And I mean, I would say like a lot of the other parents I meet around here have a lot of like very strong opinions about birth plans and process and medical intervention and all this stuff. I was kind of, I'm going to get there. We're in New York City. We have some of the best doctors in the world. Like, I trust them. And I thought, well, if I'm not in so much pain, I'm not going to just go in there begging for an epidural. But if I am, I'm going to be happy to receive one. We were very go with the flow for the process of it all.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, which I think is good that you're relaxed.
Yeah. You're not like hinged on these certain things that you have to do. My sister-in-law gave me a book, like I think it was called The Birth Partner or something. And of course, I didn't open it until we got to the hospital.
She's like, let me read these 300 pages very quickly.
She did it. It was a lot of labor.
I read the most important chapter, which was every phase of labor.
Okay. And
so good. I would be like, oh, we're in stage three now. Here's how I can be a supportive partner. It was great.
So, what were some of the things you did to be a supportive partner?
I was in charge of the meals so Beth ended up getting induced. So we went to the hospital for like a scheduled.
Well, the reasoning was with my blood clotting disorder, they didn't want me to go far past my due date because you can have like placenta issues and clotting and then it gets really dangerous. Mm-hmm. The doctors, like we had to argue with the doctors to even let me go up to my birth date.
Even a day past.
So we negotiated with the doctors to let me schedule an induction for the day after my due date if I didn't naturally go to labor, which I then didn't. So the whole reason I got induced was for that purpose, was for like medical safety for me and for Jackson. We got induced.
Yeah. And we knew it was going to be a long process, or we anticipated it would be. So I did all the meals and entertainment.
What is entertainment? Like
dancing in the
I brought this card game phase 10.
Yeah.
And her mom was actually with us.
It was like the first week they let you have two people in the hospital. Yeah.
And so we thought about having a doula, but ultimately Beth was kind of like, I would love to have my mom there.
Yeah.
And your mom and I are close.
Yeah, so. My mom and Eric are close. My mom's a pediatrician. I was just like, and she was going to be staying with us after the baby was born. So for me, I was like, I'd rather have my mom than a doula. Like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like the three of us playing an Uno-like game until like 1 a.m. And all the nurses would come in and be like, this is the fun room.
But they'd be like, who's winning? So it was taking a long time. Erica was in charge of food, which was a lot of meals because it was like 20 hours of labor.
Oh, wow. Wait, they let you eat though?
So initially they were like, you're on a liquid diet. And I was like, I'm starving. And there's no end in sight. And they kept going, you could get some dinner. And then we'd eat dinner. And the next morning they'd be like, you could order some breakfast. Even they kept knowing like, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say, I don't even know that I ate much of like breakfast / lunch the next day. But
no.
Yeah. So Erica was in charge of meals.
Yeah.
And they upgraded my tray table and it had an iPad in it. So then we were watching The Hunger Games, which was great during contractions.
Yeah, probably not the best film to put on, which I take ownership of as the e-person in charge. But eventually when things started to get a little bit more serious, I kind of became your advocate. And Beth got really, really nauseous. I don't know if it was like from the being on the epidural for so long or just like where you were in your labor. But at one point I finally just like called in the nurses and was like, you need to give her.
Oh, I was throwing up like every 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it was bad.
So Erica's not good with throw up. So my mom was the one like right there. But Erica was like, I'll get someone.
She was like, I got this, guys.
I'm your advocate. So Erica went off and got somebody and it was like, we need her to take medication to make her less nauseous.
Yeah. And then you were having issues with your epidural because you could still feel one side of your body.
Yeah, my epidural only worked on my right side. So my right side, my leg was like floppy, but my left side, I could feel every single thing. So all my contractions, everything. So that wasn't great.
Yeah.
And then do you want me to give you like just the final where we ended up? This all started asking about Erica.
Yeah. So anyway, I got more involved as things progressed.
You're so good.
Because Beth was like, I don't know if I want to take more drugs and potentially like prolong labor, because sometimes they say that can happen. And I was kind of like,
yeah, I think on hour like 15, I was like, I just want this over. But what ended up happening is they kept coming in and like changing the monitor on my belly for the baby. Every time I'd have a reaction, they'd be like, oh, we just need to, we're like losing his heartbeat. Like we're just going to adjust things. And then at some point, a team of like 12 people came rushing in and they pushed me over. They threw an oxygen mask on me. I'm just like crying into the mask. I can't see my mom. I can't see Erica. They're yelling stuff at each other and just totally chaos.
Yeah.
And then they let me kind of flip back over and sit for a second. The OBGYN came in and she was like, hey, we need to do an emergency C-section. When you're having a contraction, the baby's heart rate is like bottoming. Yeah. And so the reason the team had rushed in is because like there was no heartbeat.
They couldn't hear. Yeah.
Right. Oh my gosh. Trying to, in theory, save his life, but they were able to get it back. And she had enough time to come in and she watched me have another contraction and watched the numbers go down again. And she was like, you're not progressing. This is getting really dangerous for him.
Yeah.
And like, we got to go. And so they wheeled me out to the OR for the C-section from that point. So it kind of went downhill in the last like 5 hours. It was like when it all kind of got scary.
I mean, I know you were very sick and you were getting sick over and over. Do you think that contributed to it? Maybe you just didn't have enough like nutrients at that point in your body, because you've been in labor for like 15 hours already. And now you're like, you know, getting sick. And
was the Pitocin. So whenever they would up the Pitocin and you would have more intense contractions, that's when we would see the heart rate go down.
Gotcha.
And then what we ended up finding out was that his cord was wrapped around his neck. And so anytime.
Yeah. So at a certain point, no matter what.
You would have had to. Yeah.
No matter what, that's where we would have ended up.
Yeah.
It was fast. It felt like a little bit more controlled than like a, we're wheeling you down immediately into the OR to like get him out. It was like, okay, we've stabilized him, but this is the right thing to do. So we're not getting to that point.
Yeah. That's pretty scary. I mean,
yeah, I was like hyperventilating.
That was a really intense moment. It was also like her mom and I could see the numbers too. And they're not telling you what's going on because they're trying to solve the problem.
Yeah.
You kind of have a sense for what's happening. And so just like I think your mom like touched my shoulder and I was about to cry because I was like, she knows.
My
like,
mom even touched more.
Your mom can
my
read mom every
my hand and I was like, I'm going to die. The baby's going to die. Like we're all dying. My mom is a very like cold scientific woman. And when she touched hand over hand with me on as they were wheeling me to the hallway, I was like, oh my God, this isn't good.
Yeah.
After the fact, she explained to me that a lot of times she's seen babies with those numbers come out and not be breathing and not make it. She wasn't nervous about me. She was nervous about him. And obviously she wasn't going to mention that to me, but she was really worried I was going to go to that OR and then there was going to be an issue with the baby, which was like very scary. I was shaking. I was scared. I didn't go in there.
You were hyped up on like drugs at this point.
Yeah. And again, they're like telling me that something's happening. I have to go into an OR, yeah. Like not the way I planned it. For the lack of a plan, I didn't plan that part. And so I was like freaking out and shaking. Yeah. And Erica, who's, I never would have in my wildest dreams used the words like chill as a thing to describe her. Kind of like, again, as a partner, really stepped into the shoes she needed to fill in that moment. And she like talked to me, helped keep me calm. Yeah. They did the surgery. And then she like held the baby by my head. And she was just really supportive and really calm in a time I would not have, if you would have asked me before that how it would have gone, I would not have said she would have been calm during something like that. So that was impressive. Well done.
I feel like you are with the right person, right? And like they compliment you in like the biggest time of need.
Yeah.
They just know exactly what you need in that moment.
Yeah.
We both can't be freaking out.
That's awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that story. I feel like that was like very intense. I feel like I was in the room with you. How was the recovery?
I have like weird random medical allergies. And so I had a really bad allergic reaction after the surgery, which made my initial recovery really not great. But after that, it ended up going smoothly. My C-section incision itself was like done amazingly. All of that's great. And recovery, it was just like, you know, you're dealing with newborn baby and you're realizing that like it's hard to sit up. And so like our first night home, he started to cry and I went to jump out of bed and I can't jump out of bed. And so I was like in excruciating pain, crying. He's crying. We're like all crying. We're in the nursery and it's just like a brutal evening. And that's when I realized, oh, I have to not, and I'm either going to wake her up or she's going to get up. We like really did the teamwork thing for the whole first month where we had kind of this routine of she'd get up and hand him to me and I would nurse him. I'd hand him back to her. She'd change his diaper. She'd put him down because I couldn't just do the up, down thing. I don't think I changed a diaper for the first month because people would be like, hey, he needs to nurse. I'd sit down. Somebody'd put him in my lap. I'd be done. Somebody'd take him back. And so I had, thankfully, between my mom and Erica for those first couple weeks, I had the ability to kind of take care of myself a little more because I had other people helping take care of Jackson.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so needed. Like I think about even my postpartum, like my mom was here like the whole time for like 2 weeks. And at first I was like, that's excessive. But then I was like, oh my God, thank God she was here. Because
when
like,
my mom would say if she was going to leave, I would be crying.
Yeah. I definitely felt that way.
She was really helpful in the beginning when we kind of felt like a hot mess. She would be like, hey, he's already eaten. You two go nap or you do that. Like she would take care of him or help us. And then once she and I started to get into a groove towards the latter half of those 2 weeks, we would be dealing with him and she'd be like, let me make you breakfast. And so she kind of would pivot into she was in this support mode, but exactly where we needed her during those 2 weeks. I honestly can't imagine doing that without her. I can't. Yeah. But like with me recovering.
She's coming back for another 2 weeks for baby two.
Yeah, that's exactly what my mom did too. And then so when I had my second, it was like not even a conversation. It was like, yeah, the basement's ready for you. Yeah. Like we renovated it. So this might be TMI, but I'm curious, how do you use the bathroom if you have a C-section? So you couldn't get up very easily.
Oh, yeah. It's slow.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like put my hand on the seat and like slowly lower myself down.
Yeah.
It's like you just don't have your ab muscles. And so it's just like there were times where it hurt. I would feel myself like just drop to the seat because I was like, oh, here I am.
Yeah.
It was a slow process.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, we have like the sink shelf in our bathroom, at least. So you can kind of use that as leverage.
Yeah.
But we have our low profile bed.
That was the hardest
part. That was the hardest part because normally if you're in a bed, you can kind of swing your legs over. And
We have this low bed. So to get into the bed, it hurts. Yeah. To get out of the bed, it hurts. And
oh
so that our bed was trendy is not the move for a C-section. For the most part, other than when I was nursing, wasn't really juggling the baby because Erica was like really helping out on that. It was super helpful.
Yeah.
It was also hard because normally in like a partnership, you can take turns and you'll be like, I'll do this shift, you do the next one, and yeah, you can kind of maximize your sleep. But with both of us having to be up every single time,
we're just both exhausted.
Yeah, it was
tough for me. Yeah. How was your relationship different with Jackson? So Beth, you nursed, right? Mm-hmm. Erica, you changed all the diapers. Do you feel like your relationship was different?
Without stereotyping every mom who's physically birthed a child, I just didn't have this instant, I'm in love with you, we're really close thing. We talk about your podcast and how it's great for people to hear these stories. I had friends who were having babies within the 2 months after me, and I would tell them, like, it's okay if you don't feel this way immediately or whatever. Like, the thing that you see in movies and TV shows isn't real. Like, it's maybe for some people, but I was kind of almost like helping them feel like they could be let off the hook. You can be a human who doesn't have all of these instant connection. And so for me, I was like, it wasn't instant. I was feeling horrible from my C-section. Reciprocation, super important. I mean, your dog greets you at the door when you get home and you feel loved. If all a baby does is take, 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 take in the beginning, other than understanding that they're so sweet and they're beautiful and you care about them, I feel like love isn't the word I would use as my instant feeling. You said it probably quicker than I did, which feels almost backwards, but she seemed like more connected to him and more in love with him out of the gate than I was, which I think is interesting. But then I'd have moments. I was nursing him and we like stopped. I stopped nursing him for his nighttime bottle, and it became a nighttime bottle. And that way Erica could give him a bottle at night and do it. And for some reason, letting go of that moment, that was the first time I had this like emotional thing where it used to be really sweet where he'd fall asleep on me after nursing and I'd put him down, and I stopped doing that. And I had a moment where I was like crying, telling Erica that like, I don't know if I can do it. That was probably the first time I was like, oh, this does mean more to me than I realized it did.
Yeah, you take it for granted a little. Like, you don't realize how
close I was with him until I like you peel it back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Erica was definitely more.
Yeah. I mean, I would spend a lot of, we both did spend a lot of time where he would just like sleep on you and obviously came everywhere with us. But it definitely is like a turning point when they look at you and smile and you start to get that interaction, because you're just going from like, I just need to keep you alive to like, oh, now we are like forming more of a relationship. And it's not even really until now that I feel like, oh, I'm starting to parent and be like, please do not scream and hit that child.
But there's also like, now I can ask him to come over and give me a hug and he like runs over.
Yeah.
That's like a feeling that doesn't happen out of the gate. When your child chooses you and like wants to care about, that feels so much nicer.
Yeah.
Just like they happen to be attached to you all the time, because that's just like they need you to survive.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I had just the instant butterflies of it all.
Yeah. Thank you for normalizing that and for articulating it the way you did. I had a similar experience. So I honestly was like not feeling connected to him until he started to smile at me. Not just passing gas. I totally get what you're saying. And I'm glad you mentioned it to your friends, because I also feel like a lot of my friends were like expecting this thing, and I'm like, you might not like them right away. Just FYI, you love them, but you don't like them.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah. There's so much pressure.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about future family planning, because you still have 8 vials.
Yes.
Just from connecting with Erica, she mentioned she might want to carry next.
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, when I met Erica, she told me she never wanted to physically carry a baby and that she would only do it if her partner for some reason couldn't. That's what I signed up for. I was very excited to carry. I assumed I'd carry more than one. And now Erica has decided she's going to carry, which I think is amazing. And I am very excited for her. But I myself am having a weird, like, I now need to be okay with it. I didn't realize that was going to be like a one and done for me. And so now all of a sudden I'm processing that. I think I've said a couple times, like, I think I need to go to therapy to talk about this. Like, I think I need to chat out why this irks me and why I feel some type of way about it. I don't know if I had known this going into baby one that it would have changed anything, but it like changed how I assumed it was all going to go. But I also get the, and you can obviously talk more to it, but I get the like, you don't want to look back and wish you had done something. And unfortunately for the science of it all, like women have a timeline and an expiration date on these things. And I myself wouldn't want to look back and wish I had done something that I'll never have the opportunity to do. I had always said if I was going to carry again, I wanted to carry Erica's egg. Because to me, it was important that the DNA of our second child was her egg no matter what. So that was always part of the plan. But now it's just Erica's carrying Erica's egg. You can talk about your heart change. But for me, it was actually a weird mental, oh, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, I actually get it because I feel like the first pregnancy, I had a good pregnancy, but for my second kid, we're pretty sure we're done. So when I was pregnant with my second, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like probably the last time I'll be pregnant. Like, I don't know. I just had that realization. And I went through the entire pregnancy thinking like, oh, this is like the last time I'm going to see my belly like this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was weird. I had the same thing.
Yeah.
Where I really felt like I had to savor it because I wasn't going to ever do this again, most likely.
Yeah.
So I kind of get what you're saying.
Which is also so funny coming from you, given like your birth story, that you're like, oh yeah, I wish I could do that again.
I could just go get a C-section now. Yeah. Like I wouldn't try for another natural birth. So the fact that I wouldn't have to go through that whole labor and delivery issue is, and I had such an easy pregnancy, that's like a no-brainer for me.
Yeah. I don't even really remember why we started going down the path of like me considering carrying. But I know we both always wanted to have a child that was tied to both of our DNA. And as we were getting more serious about talking about the timeline for baby two is when I started more seriously thinking about whether I wanted to pass on the experience to carry. And I'm still at the point where like, I think once I am, if everything goes as planned, once I am pregnant, I'll be really excited. But making the decision to choose to do something that really scares me is a little bit like, I think getting in the way of my excitement at the moment. Cause I'm like so scared I'm going to feel sick or tired and like how it's going to play out for me because you made it look so easy, but it's not for everyone. And so it's kind of just like the fear of the unknown and then let alone experiencing your labor.
Oh, I joked like if I had to be in the room watching what was happening to me, I would not be signing on for this.
Yeah. Like I haven't forgotten. Beth has probably like blacked it out by now. Yeah.
But I think in Erica, and maybe it wasn't even you in so many words that said it, but it was like I touched on it, but it's like you're never gonna look back and be like, man, I'm so mad I made this baby. That's really great. You're gonna look back and be like, oh, I wish I had done it. Like that's going to only one of those scenarios, like you'll live with regret. The other one, even if it's like it was 10 months and it was horrible, even if it was worse and you still ended up with your baby after, that's a blip. And you're going to look back and still be really happy you went through crappy 10 months or whatever it may be to have this baby and this experience. Yeah. And so kind of that was one of the pieces that you had brought to the table was like, you'll only look back and regret not doing it was basically the moral of the story.
Yeah. And when I talked to my sister about it, who is obviously very biased and wants me to carry, she was kind of like, in my opinion, like it's all about the different experiences that you have. And she was like, me personally, like this is one that I think is worth seeing going along for the journey. That kind of spoke to me too, because I was kind of like, I don't want the what if in 20 years where I'm like looking back and like, oh, I wish that I didn't prioritize work or like a million other excuses for like why I shouldn't do this. And I didn't want to give that up. And so that is ultimately why I will be.
I had this when she kind of came to me, when it seemed like she started to change in her thought. Yeah. I had a weird thing of, I wonder if your family will care about the kid that you birth more. That's like your DNA and your family's side. And her family is amazing to Jackson. They're so sweet and they love him so much. There's no like, he's not our bloodline or anything like that's not a thing.
Yeah.
But I had this weird moment of like, do you think that would change? Do you think all of a sudden that opinion would change if one is very clearly like Erica's kid.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we don't know that answer until we know it, but it was a weird thing for me to think about.
Yeah. One vice versa with your family too.
Yeah.
But I do not anticipate that.
No, I don't either. But it is like an interesting thing that you end up considering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think as I had talked to you about a month or so ago when we first connected, my dad also did a hard sell on it. I just started a new job a couple months ago and he was like, I know you're going to use that as a reason to not, but like the workforce is so different now. Like no one's going to think twice about it. This is coming from like a C-suite finance exec too. And I was kind of, well, what would you do like in my position? He was like, I would carry the kid and not care what anyone thinks about it. And so it was just kind of nice to hear that from someone who also really understands like the pressure that I feel and how important work is to me, because he is very similar in that way. And so I don't even know if he knows how much that like mattered to me, but it was just like a nice conversation that we had.
I know you're scared about the physical thing, but I also feel like it's a chance for your body to really, really show you what it could do. And I don't know how much Beth has told you throughout her pregnancy, but like, I remember when I was pregnant and I was going to these scans and like seeing this baby, I'm like, I can't believe my body did that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's autopilot. It like knows what to do. And I remember there was one time we were like in the living room and I'm like, we're just watching TV. And I'm like, are you jealous? It's like to my husband. And he's like, of what? And I'm like, of me being pregnant. And he's like, no. But I'm like, why wouldn't you be jealous? This is so cool. Like, don't you think this is cool? And he's like, yeah, it is cool. I don't want to be pregnant though. You know, for me, I was like, you know, there are people who have trouble conceiving, people who cannot get pregnant. How many people get the chance to do it? And how many people get the chance to see their body do these like crazy things and then kind of birth this whole other life? That's such a, I don't know. It just still blows my mind, you know? So
it's wild.
That's how I would look at it. Your body's going to amaze you and it's going to do these things that you didn't think were possible. And I feel like I appreciated my body even more after I had the kids. Cause I was like, you know, my body can do literally anything. And then breastfeeding, I'm like, literally can do anything.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I know. Even sometimes now I'll be like, he came out of you. Like, is that not so wild?
Yeah, it's crazy. So, is there a message you guys would like to share to any future expecting moms or any other couples embarking on this process?
I would say during the fertility process or even the trying for process for anyone, the thing that kind of made it, and we got pregnant on time four is actually very quick,
pretty good.
And even so, those four times felt long and excruciating, and the three times they peed on a stick and it was negative, it sucked. It was emotional, and I can't imagine doing that for an even longer extended period of time. But the thing that we built in that was really nice,
and I was going to say the same thing.
Damn it. Oh, wait, no, not damn it, because I took it, is building out silver linings to the moment. So you spend 14 days being like, I'm pregnant, can't eat sushi, I can't drink wine or have the martini I love or anything like that. Or even like cold cuts. Like, I'm a sucker for like a deli sandwich. And so you spend 14 days being like, oh, not going to do that for 10 months. And then you find out that you're not pregnant. Instead of like, you put so much pressure on yourself, like I kept being like, it's me, I'm the problem, why can't I get pregnant? You find your silver lining. You celebrate like, hey, I'm not pregnant yet. I'm going to go have a really nice bottle of wine. Or we would make like a reservation at a really nice restaurant and we'd go get like martinis and a great dinner. Or we'd go for sushi and or I'd get like a ham sandwich. Or, like whatever it was, you figured out a way that it take kind of the sting off of a crappy moment and find like the positive outlook. And it's not easy. It's easier said than done, but it did really help. Like Erica's parents, one of the times gave us like a really nice bottle of wine and we had it and we're like, maybe this will sit on the shelf for another year. Maybe it won't. And it didn't, we drank it in like one night, but it was really nice being able to be like, oh, well, we'll open this wine.
Yeah.
And kind of gave you some medicine to take it, like choke it down with and make it less sad and painful as you did it. So that was kind of something that was really helpful to us in the ebbs and flows of the process. That's kind of like a little little piece of advice from me.
We'd have a reservation and it was either like, we're going to celebrate not being pregnant or being pregnant. And so either way, it was like nice to have something that you were had on the books and were doing no matter what.
Yeah. And then I guess, I mean, I think that everybody is going to give you unsolicited advice in this entire process from beginning to end, how they got pregnant or didn't get pregnant, what worked for them. I had really horrible cramps in the beginning of my pregnancy. Not every woman has that. Like, everybody has a different type of pregnancy. And as I'm sure you can attest, like, even you and your own body is different baby one to baby two. And I think it's like, you can read and you can talk to people and whatever, but like, you just have to constantly let yourself off the hook. Everybody's going to be different all the time and you can't constantly compare yourself. And it's even in parenting. Our son has this best friend. Well, we forced him to be best friends with because he's got a cool mom. His mom's really cool. You're like, and even then I'm like, oh, John's starting to say words. Why isn't Jackson saying words? But then John's mom's like, Jackson's walking. And it's like, we do it unintentionally. Like, we constantly give ourselves a hard time in that. And I feel like we all just need to give ourselves a break. And that's kind of what I was saying earlier. Like, I tell my friends, like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Jackson face planted a wall and had a golf ball size on his eyebrow, it's dark black eye. And I sent it to my friend and I was like, it'll happen to you. It's okay. And it's like, and I was like, it looks really sketchy right now though when I walk around with him. But it's kind of just like, you gotta not give yourself, there's so many reasons to give yourselves a hard time from beginning to end of all of this. And you gotta try to not, and like also silence out some of the noise that comes in during it.
Yeah.
It's not easy. What's your birth plan? I'm like, I don't have one. Like, why not? I'm like, because I don't. And that would be it. And I don't even know where I would start and why I would. And it was kind of like every step of the way. And it's kind of like, whatever. People have been doing this in caves. Like, it's fine. So that's kind of my other piece to that is like, none of us have a how-to guide and we all get there. You just said it. Your body knows what to do and does it. And kids want to be alive. Like, it's like, hand them that avocado. Like, they'll mush it. It's fine.
Yeah. And it's
kind of.
Yeah.
Now he puts chalk in his mouth. And so that's
now he eats weird, sketchy stuff off the playground. But And so I think that's kind of what we've been trying to maintain as our approach. And again, sometimes it's harder and sometimes it's easier, but I think in all walks of it, that would be my advice.
I love that. Thank you guys for being on the show today and sharing your story and all this advice. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is great.
I love the tradition that Erica and Beth started during their conception stage at celebrating at 14 days. As they shared, it was a bumpy and stressful journey, having to meet certain deadlines, be on call for different steps, and finishing off with a fairly traumatic birth story. Regardless, the rocky experience was not enough to deter Erica's hope to carry their next child as she shifts her perspective on the beautiful experience that is motherhood. For more information on all things motherhood, or to give feedback on the podcast, check out our website, amaandco.com, or our Facebook group, Ama & Co. My name is Margaret, and I'll see you next time on Ama Need a Minute.